gain a lot by giving the Hakdama last week to the general topic of Hiddur Mitzvah. So let's first take a look at the Gemara together and get a basic sense of what the sugya is about. And then we could try to figure out the details, of which there are a lot to work out. So now the Gemara says in Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, right after where we left off, Tana Rabbanan, Mitzvahs Chanukah, Ner Yishu Beiso. That basic level, the obligation of Ner Chanukah, is that every household should have one candle. And that's it. Every household, every night, no matter what it is, if it's the eighth night of Chanukah and you have 37 people living in the household, one night, one candle. That's it. Now there's what to discuss about that concept, about the notion of Ner Yishu Beiso. And maybe we'll come back to trying to figure out what exactly the notion is there. But in any event, that's the basic obligation. And the Gemara continues to say, if you want to be extra special, the Hamahadrin, you want to do things in a nicer way, then Ner L'Kol Echad V'Echad. So then you have a candle per person in the household. So we've already gone a second level above, and we still don't have a concept of a menorah. Yeah, right, the most famous iconic image of Chanukah, the menorah, and we see that it's apparently not necessary, that every household just needs a candlestick. This is separate from the question we're talking about a week or two ago about the Avnei Nezer's issue of if you need a kli or not. It's separate from the question if you need some type of holder, but the holder that we have today, the eight branches of the menorah, it's not really necessary. This is such a famous image that everyone in the world knows. I mean, really, literally, everyone in the world sees menorahs somewhere, but apparently it's not necessary. All you have to do is have one candle every night, and that's it. And if you want to be super special, you want to be from the Mahadran, you still don't need a menorah. You just need a candle per person, but nothing about an eight-branched candelabra. If you want to be super duper special, you really want to be religious. So Mahadran, Minha Mahadran. If you want to go above and beyond the Mahadran, super duper extra level, so then you have menorahs. Beishamai Omrim Yom Rishon Madlik Shmona. So Beishamai is Mahalach as we start with 8. Mikan Ve'elech Pochas V'holech. And we keep going down 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ubeis Hillel Omrim, and this is of course the more familiar position. Yom Rishon Madlik Achas Mikan Ve'elech Moses V'holech. We start with 1 and we go up. So Amar Ula Pligi Batrei Amarayim Marava. There was Machlokes two Amarayim in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yossi Barav, Rabbi Yossi Bar Zvida. Chad Amar Time of the Beis Shammai Kineged Yamim Had Nechnasin, V'Time of the Beis Hillel Kineged Yam Hayotzin. One says that the reason Beis Shammai has his opinion is because we count down the days that are still left to go, and Beis Hillel's opinion is because we count up, and the other opinion says that. V'chad Amar, Taima de Beis Shammai Kineged Parei HaChag. Beis Shammai's reason is we parallel the Korbanos of Sukkos and we go down, just like the Korbanos of Sukkos go down 13, 12, 11, etc. V'Taima de Beis Hillel, the Mailin V'Kodesh V'Ein Maridin. That we tend to go up in matters of Kedusha and not go down. There's a lot of fascinating things to talk about here. We're not going to be able to zero in on all of them, just to throw out some of the other issues besides the central point of Mahadran, just to take note of. So you see, first of all, this dual structure in the Machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, the two tracks of reasoning, is interesting, and that's something that we might come back to. What do you think is the point of the extra line at the end about the two individuals who acted different ways? What does that add on to the story? That's what it seems like. Yeah, the Ritva has a comment like that, and it's quoted in later Sfarim as well, that maybe this is to make the point that it's actually permissible to follow the view of Beis Shammai, that maybe this isn't as much of a settled issue as we perceive it. We perceive it as being a clear Beis Hillel win, but maybe that's a little bit of a open issue. We'll talk a little bit more about that as it ties into some other points, but that's an interesting nekuda. It's also interesting in terms of the reasoning themselves. Maybe we'll also find room to fill that in a little bit. But first of all, there's a lot to say about both things. So in terms of Beis Hillel's alleged opinion that Milan Bekodesh Ve'ed Maridin, that's a little bit of a Chiddush. Why is that a Chiddush?
It's Kodesh.
Well, first of all, the usage of the word Kodesh is a Chiddush, I guess, because we saw that not everyone agrees that Kedusha is really at play here. But there's also another reason why it's a little bit of a Chiddush. Any other possibilities? Well, Milan Bekodesh Ve'ed Maridin in its normal usage means that if you have an item of Kedusha, so then you can only use it for equal or greater purposes, as opposed to using it for a lesser purpose. But to say that, oh, any time we have something which is Kodesh, or which could be called Kodesh, we like higher numbers, that's not the normal usage. I mean, this is a unique type of application. So that itself is interesting and something to keep in mind. And of course, Beis Shammai's point about Pari HaChag is interesting on a couple of levels, because what's the connection? What does it have to do with anything? Now, this is not the first and only time that you'll see a parallel drawn between Sukkot and Chanukah, and I guess it's somewhat timely for us right now because we're in the middle of maybe the period in between Sukkot and Chanukah. So there are some parallels that are drawn. This is the most famous, but it's not the only one. And that's also one of the themes to keep in mind, what might be connections between Sukkot and Chanukah, and this seems to be one. I saw an interesting comment, just an interesting word, the Tshuva is Dvar Yehoshua. I think we've mentioned him in the past. Dvar Yehoshua lived about 50 years ago, was a great posek. He lived in Tel Aviv, he was a dayan in Tel Aviv. His name was Yeshua Menachem Ehrenberg. Has a fascinating Tshuva. He was clearly a very sharp Talmud Chacham, and he knew a lot. So he has a discussion, he has an interesting discussion, one of his Tshuvas in Chelik Beis, where he says that he discusses a piyut. There's a piyut that's recited on Sukkot, and it's got a strange line in it. It says that it talks about saying Hallel on Sukkot, and it has a rhyme, I forgot the exact language, but it says something about how we say Hallel, Shiva lebeis Hillel, Yom v'lolel, something like that. That we say Hallel 7 days, like Beis Hillel. So that's hard to understand, because is there a machlokus about saying Hallel every day of Sukkot? We generally assume that everyone agrees to say Hallel every day of Sukkot. So why is there a piyut that says, oh, like Beis Hillel, we say Hallel 7 days of Sukkot? So he quotes that some suggest that maybe it means to say Beis HaKnesses, maybe Beis HaKnesses is sometimes called Beis Hillel. It's a tough idea to understand. So he has the following, it's a pilpul, but it's also interesting in terms of what it says about the context here. It says, the Gemara says that we say full Hallel every day on Sukkot and not on Pesach. There's two reasons given in Chazal. One reason is because of the Mitzrayim, because of the Mitzrayim dying, so we don't want to say full Hallel the last days of Pesach. But the other idea Chazal have is that Pesach is all one yontif, so we just need Hallel at the beginning. But Sukkot, because it's chalukin b'karbon aseihen, because every day there are different karbonos, different numbers of karbonos, so therefore it's as if every yontif is differentiated from every other day. So it's as if every day of Sukkot is its own yontif, so therefore there's a hallel every day. So why should that be true? Why should it be that just because there are different numbers of karbonos, it's as if every day is a new yontif? So he explained as follows. He says, the idea of the karbanos is keneged umos ha'olam, that we bring a total of 70 cows keneged the 70 nations of the world. So we bring a cow to be mechaper for each one of their issues. So if it's 70 nations and 70 cows, it means it's one cow per nation. So it means that really every day we're doing different nations of the world. We're bringing kaparas for different countries. So therefore, it's ke'ilu every yontif, every day of yontif is a new yontif, because it's not the same korban as yesterday. The fact that it's a different number represents the fact that it's a new set of nations that we're bringing a kapara for. So therefore, it's ke'ilu every day is a different yontif. I happened to see last night in a totally different context, nothing about the sugi, but I saw that Rav Lichtenstein in an article quoted a line from the Chafetz Chaim, that the Chafetz Chaim had said that if the Ummas HaOlam knew how much we daven for them, they'd be rushing to print machzor. So this is the example. Sukkot is a time when we bring korbanos on behalf of the nations of the world. So the fact that there's a different number every day, that shows you that it's different nations that we're addressing. So therefore, every day is a different yontiv. That's how he explains that idea of chalukim b'korban hasein. So then he goes on to say, he says, however, Beis Shammai doesn't agree with that. How do you know? Because Shabbos chafalah from the base, that according to our Gemara, Beis Shammai derives its pattern for Neris Chanukah from the Korbanos on Sukkot. So what's the connection? If the number of Korbanos on Sukkot has to do with paralleling different nations of the world, so then it's got nothing to do with Sukkot. Happens to be a sort of Nassim Gestetner, and one of his tshuvas does have a discussion about how they might parallel. We'll leave that for now. You can look it up. But he assumes at Dvar Yeshua that there's no parallel there. So therefore, it must be that Beis Shammai has a completely different understanding of why the Korbanos go down on Sukkot. It's not because each day is something different, but that there's an inyan of going down. That on Sukkot, we recognize that every day as the yontif tends to wind down, so we're a little bit less excited than we were the first day when it was fresh and when there was a whole yontif in front of us. So therefore, every day the simcha is a little bit less. So the korbanos are a little bit fewer because the simcha is indeed decreasing, and there's a medrash like this, or Yalkut Shimon, something like that, which has a comment that when you have a guest, so the first day the guest is there, you serve them very elaborate food. And then the second day, it's a little bit less elaborate. And the third day, it's a little bit less. Until they're there for a while already, they're getting less fancy food every day they're there. So it must be a little bit of a typo in the Medrash, because it says the first day you serve them ofos, and the second day you serve basar. So somehow the ofos come out as more important than the basar. It must be a girsa issue. But in any event, so the Medrash says that that's basically what happens, that it's understandable that things decline a little bit. So Yontif, that seems to be what Beis Shammai understands, that both Sukkot and Chanukah share that notion, that it's very intense at the beginning, and then understandably it wears off a little bit as time goes on. So therefore Beis Shammai thinks it makes sense to say that just like the korbanos go down on Sukkot, so too the candles should go down on Chanukah. So if that's the case, says the Dvar Yoshua, so you see Beis Shammai doesn't agree with this whole parallelism that the korbanos are there about the umos ha'olam, and each one is a different number because each one is different nations. So therefore, how does he explain why it is that we say full halal every day of Sukkot? So he suggests maybe they don't agree. Maybe we're not aware of this machlokis, but maybe Beis Shammai doesn't think that we should say full halal every day of Sukkot, and maybe that pshat in the piyut that says we say halal shiva l'beis hillel, is assuming there's a machlokas that the fact that we say halal every day is following a view of Beis Hillel that Beis Shammai didn't agree with. So that last part is a pilpul, but it's just interesting in terms of what is the possible imagery and the symbolism of Sukkot going down, and what's the possible connection to Chanukah. That's really what I want to get out of it, if you pay attention to the pilpul or not. But his point about what the cows going down represents and what possible connection does it have to Chanukah, I think thought that was interesting. Michael?
Just because Pari Achad relate to the Umor Ha'olam, correspond to the Umor Ha'olam, does not mean that there's no connection between Chanukah and Sukkot. It just means that we maybe don't understand the connection between Pari Achad and Sukkot.
Agreed. It's not as self-evident. The factor that makes it go down, we're not clear how that has any parallel to Chanukah. So it could be have a different answer. And again, I think his particular pilpul, we don't have to necessarily get too hung up on. But I'm just mentioning it because it's interesting how he draws this parallel. You're right that you could have another way of explaining what the connection is. But his premise is there's no obvious link between that theme and Chanukah, so therefore maybe Beis Shammai is coming from somewhere else. I also saw another sefer that I wanted to suggest in general, that Zemachlokas, he has a bunch of proofs from all over, that Beis Hillel believes that our avod in this world is to do avodas Hashem through our gashmias. And Beis Shammai believes that our key avod in this world is to be as far away as possible from gashmias and to only be spiritual. And that therefore they have different views of fire, that fire is there to get rid of the bad, or fire is there to light up the good. So according to Beis Hillel, the fire is there for a positive purpose. It represents things that are good, so therefore we want it to go up. Well, according to Beis Shammai, it's a fire to burn out the bad. So therefore, we hope that there's less and less needed every day, that they start off with a lot, and then it gets less and less, and we go down. Could be. In any event, so that's whatever the reasoning is, but there is machlokus between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. And even if it's true, like the Ritva says, that we could pick either view, and maybe that's the impact of the last line of the Gemara, but still, we don't pick Beis Shammai. I don't think anyone here has ever seen Beis Shammai's view followed. Correct me if I'm wrong. But our practice is to follow Beis Hillel, that we go up. But, as you've hopefully seen, there's still a machlokus about that. Even if we accept Beis Hillel's view, that Mahadran means that we count in ascending order, there still is a fundamental machlokus about how that plays out. Who's the machlokus between? Sorry? Right, machlokus we've shown in between Tosfos and the Rambam. That according to Tosfos, Tosfos is over here, right on Mahadran and Mahadran. It's a very short Tosfos, so we'll just read it together. It says, Nira Lari, the Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, the whole machlokus between them, whether it's up or down, but the whole idea of changing the number, Lo kaimi ela aner ishu beiso. Meaning what? That we have three levels here. So you might have assumed that you have to do at least level one. If you want to do better, do level two. Also add in a per-person symbolism. And you want to be the best, keep going and add per night also. So you have per person and per night. So says the Ri, no, that's not the way you do it. If you want to do level three, you skip level two. So level two is you do per person, and level three is you do per night. But not that you build upon it, then you do per night and per person. Why not? Says those shekani yeshoser hider the ikar hakerik shemosu b'holik or machaser. If you want to say like Beshamay shukin neged yam hanichnasim b'yotzin, but most in the kol echad afilu Yosef mikan ve'elach like hakerik shispur shakach yesh bnei adam b'bayis. That basically Tosfos is saying that let's say if you want to keep adding and multiplying the two systems together, so let's say you're going to have four people in the household and it's the third night of Hanukkah. So how many candles are you going to put out there? 12. But the onlooker is going to see 12 candles. What does that mean? What's the significance of 12 candles? Right, it could mean there are four people and it's the third night, it's the second night and there are six people, it's the third night and there's four people, there's one night, he's not even Jewish. I mean, it could mean anything. What is the significance of 12 if you're an onlooker and you don't know how to divide up the numbers? So if you want to have this hecker, if you want to have this value of going per night, then you have to leave it alone. It has to be per night only and not per person. That's the view of the Ri. Now, the Rambam disagrees. Yes, Frank?
It doesn't really help because on the second night also, I mean, if according to the second level also, if there's 10 people in the house and there's 10 lights, there's still people going out if you're being Mahadran or
if it's... Even if you're just doing... Well, according to the Tosfos, you'll never do 10 candles.
No, unless, according to the second level, each person lights their own.
Right, so you're saying in general, you could still have confusion, how you know which system you're doing. Right, it's a fair question in general. Tosfos isn't really clear about how you address that part. But that's a fair question to ask, and I have to try to figure out if there's a good answer for it. But Tosfos' premise doesn't address that question, but says that in general, having a bilbul, mixing the numbers together, mixing these two systems together, is going to create confusion. The key question of how do you know which system somebody's using is a fair question. I have to answer that separately. But their issue is just that mixing the systems together seems to be unintelligible, and therefore you're not going to accomplish anything. Michael?
Also, Tosfos told us that we're lighting inside the house nowadays. Mm-hmm. So it's for the people of the household that we're doing this before the Misa.
So they already know how many people there are.
Yeah, if that's the case, then, yeah.
I mean, the other Tosfos, the last Tosfos mentioned, right. That's an interesting point, too. So you think,
watch. Tosfos says there's hackers.
Right, hacker for people inside or people outside?
I don't know. Is there much of a hacker for people inside? Is there
well... I guess his premise is that that's the only people who are watching. If it's inside, and nobody outside is going to see. So if we're working off that premise, although it doesn't have to be
the only. So we still do it by the door. I don't know. Just do it by the door, just so people.
Right, that's true also. So there is some mixture. I mean, the fact is there is some aspect of outside. And also, this could be a machlokus within the Din of the Gemara, which doesn't necessarily have to work on that premise also. So there is some aspect of heker for the outside, probably no matter what. So even if we assume the people inside know how many people are there, still there is some component that outsiders are a key factor. So that's Tosfos' position. That's the Reeve's position. That we skip level 2 and go to level 3. So who does not seem to be worried about this? The Rambam. Right, the Rambam is interesting. There's actually three straight halachas in the Rambam where he talks about this. And we'll focus for a moment on the first two. And he writes in the beginning of Perek Dalet of Hilchas Chanukah, so he describes exactly what Tosfos doesn't want. When he says, Kamaneros humadik b'chanaka mitzvasa shehe kol bayis v'bayis madlik ner echad, bein shahayu an shehabayis merubin, bein shalo hayu bo elo adam echad. One candle per household, that's the mitzvah, no matter what. V'mahadar is a mitzvah, madlik neros k'minyin an shehabayis, ner l'kol echad v'echad, bein anashim, bein anashim. If you want to be better, so then per person, v'mahadar yoyser alza, you want to be the best, v'osa mitzvah min ha-muvchar, madlik ner l'kol echad, v'layla harishon, v'mosiv v'holech b'chol layla v'layla ner echad. So you do both. Exactly what Tosfos rejected, that you keep the per-person system, he mentions that explicitly, and you also add on the per-night system. And then he goes on to spell it a little more in Chela and Halacha Beis, Ketzad hareish hayu anshe bayis asara, v'layla harishon madlik asara nerus, v'layla sheni esrim, v'layla shlishi shloshim, achinimsa madlik v'layla shmini shmonim nerus. So he's pretty explicit, exactly what Tosfos says not to do, that you combine the systems and you multiply, so if you have 10 people in the house, 8th night of Hanukkah, it's 80 candles. The third halacha, he says something interesting, we'll come back to look at that third halacha. But essentially, here's a fundamental machlokas between the Rambam and Tosfos, and the simplest way to say it is that Tosfos is worried about this issue of heker, of recognizability, while the Rambam is not worried about it. The Rambam doesn't seem to care that the math is going to be complicated. And we'll have to try to figure out why that is. Now, there is an anomaly here in terms of Psak. And that is, what's the anomaly? Sorry? Right, so especially, again, this week we focused, Klal Yisrael is focused on the difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. So here we have a unique type of Psak, that normally the Shulchan Aruch represents the Sephardi tradition, and the Ramah exists in order to modify it to the Ashkenazi tradition. But here there's something unusual. So the Shulchan Aruch, you would expect, would follow the Rambam, the Sephardi authority, and you'd expect the Ramah to modify it based on the opinions of Rishonim such as Rashi and Tosfos. But here we have a unique kind of thing in that the Shulchan Aruch follows the view of Tosfos, while the Ramah apparently follows the view of the Rambam, crisscross. And the Taz, on the side of the page, has a comment over there about how unusual this is. And he writes, Zeh lo motzinu b'shar makomos. This is not something that we find anywhere else, that there should be such a crisscross in the halachic tradition of Psak. Rabbi Shmayahu Shulman Shlit is a big Talmud Chacham who lives in Brooklyn now. He's lived in Queens for many decades. So he has many Sfarim. So in one of his Sfarim, he has a little letter about this. So he has tremendous bekiyas. He notes a few other places where, if you look carefully, you see that it also seems like there's a crisscross in the tradition of Psak, but certainly this is the most famous one. The Taz says it's unique, that the Ramah follows the Rambam and Tosfos is adopted by the Shulchan Aruch. Now, I said a minute ago that the Rambam seems to be followed by the Ramah, because the truth is, it's been noted by some Svarim that the Rambam and the Ramah are not exactly identical, that there is a significant difference in how they describe their rulings. What am I talking about? They are, Michael?
The Ramah requires Sephira still.
Well, that might be the explanation, but just on the surface, what's the difference between the Rambam and the Ramah? So the difference is on the surface that what they share, the reason it seems like they pass in the same way, is that the Ramah would agree in the scenario the Rambam just described, that there are 80 candles being lit in this household of 10 people on the 8th night of Hanukkah. However, he describes a different scenario. The way he has it, if you read the Rambam, right, so what did the Rambam say? The Rambam discusses that Balabayas is lighting Hanukkah candles, and he's going to light a candle per person. So, in this scenario, on the 8th night, he's going to light 80 candles. In the Ramah, it's a little different. Right, his language in Halacha Aleph is, Madlik Neros Kiminyan Anshe Habayas. Sounds like the head of the household, if he has 5 people in his family, he lights 5 candles. But the Ramah has it a little bit differently, and that's what's perhaps familiar from our households, that it's not, that it's, the way the Rambam describes it, we've probably never seen anyone do that. Right? Has anyone ever seen that, let's say you have 5 siblings and 2 parents, so have you seen your father light 8 candles on the first night of Hanukkah and 16 candles on the second night? Presumably not. What usually happens is the father lights the menorah for the household and others then choose to light their own menorahs. Leaving aside the question of whether the mother lights her menorah or not, but let's say the father lights and other household members light their own. That is our contemporary version, or at least most of us, that's our contemporary version of Ner L'Kol Echad V'Echad. That's what the Ramah says. So that's different than the Rambam. That's significantly different. Right? It's not lighting a candle per person. It's everyone lights their own candle. So that's a significant difference. And it's a question how to explain that. So it could be that, I think this is what Michael was getting at a minute ago, that some explain in a very straightforward way, like the Binyan Shlomo or Shlomo Mivilna has a tshuva like this, that it's not really accurate to say that the Ramah purely paskins like the Rambam. But maybe the Ramah paskins like both the Rambam and Tosfos. That maybe he paskins like the Rambam, that we should have 80 candles on this 8th night of Hanukkah with 10 people. But he's worried about the hecker issue. He agrees with Tosfos' concern. And the point that Ephraim raised before, that we're not going to know what's going on with these 80 candles. So therefore, there's a solution. If the Baal HaBas lights 80 candles and he has a row of 80 candles on his windowsill, it's going to be very confusing. But if in this household of 10 people, there's a menorah over here, and a few inches away there's another menorah, and a few inches away there's another menorah, so you have 10 menorahs of 8 candles each, then people will know what's going on. So our system today addresses Ephraim's concern. Our system today is very good. Right? So we have, like the Ramah, we have menorahs for each member of the household, and each one has its own configuration of candles per night. So if somebody is able to clearly see what's going on, then they could see, okay, here's 5 menorahs, each one has 4 candles in it, so it must be the 4th night of Hanukkah for 5 people. So maybe that's the Ramah's position, that he doesn't actually purely follow the Rambam. He follows the Rambam a little bit, but he's worried about Tosfos' question, which the Rambam wasn't worried about. That's one approach, and there's probably a lot of logic behind that approach. Hi.
So, basically, you can use the Ramah to answer. In a way, you can use the Ramah to answer up Tosfos on the Rambam.
To mix the two, right? To do the Rambam's view while accounting for Tosfos'
right.
question.
So is there anyone that says for the Rambam in the other way that maybe that you don't need Hecker?
I think so, yeah, we'll get to that also. So I think without, because the Rambam doesn't say like the Ramah, so we still have to defend the Rambam. So the Ramah, he's okay because he takes care of it, but the Rambam doesn't, so it does seem like the Rambam's not worried about Hecker. We have to explain why. So before doing that, the point that I would have mentioned later on, but because we discussed Hiddur last week, I'll mention it here just to kind of get it out of the way, and especially because it's a very often quoted point in this sugya, so we should know about it. So it's a question whether it's correct. So we'll discuss later whether it's correct, but we should mention it now because it's a very often quoted part of the sugya, and we now have the background to understand it. But do you have a question?
What you're saying now that the Ramah, that everybody should like their own menorah, mm-hmm. when they're all occupied in Hecker, supposing somebody sees the act of light, like they just come like a half an hour later or so, just going to see the various menorahs and still have this problem in Hecker.
No, not necessarily. So menorahs are configured in a way, let's say you have, say you live in this room, right? So you have that long windowsill. So if you had five people living in this room, and one put it under this window, and one put it under that window pane, and you know, you have the five window panes here, so somebody who walks past a half hour later will see five clearly distinct menorahs, and each one will have four candles in it. So they'll understand it's the fourth night of Hanukkah, and five people. So if that's what's going on, then that's not a bad system. But the Rambam doesn't say that, so he clearly doesn't seem to worry about Hecker, so they have to try to figure out why that is. But before we address that, so just we'll mention here the position of the Brisker Rav, which again is very, very often quoted in this sugya. The Brisker Rav suggests that the machlokas between the Rambam and the Rama relates to something we discussed last week. That he thinks that this difference, he's assuming a machlokas between the Rambam and the Rama, is l'shitasam, in a machlokas that we discussed last week, when we talked about the general hiddur mitzvah sugya. Okay. If you recall, so we discussed that when the Gemara says in Kuf Lamed Gimel that if you're doing a bris milah and you have finished the cut, but you have not done the hiddur, the Gemara says you don't go back. You don't start again to do the hiddur by the bris milah. So if you recall, so most Rishonim say, almost all the Rishonim say, the reason you wouldn't go back is because it's Shabbos. So therefore, it's a chiddush to begin with that you can do a bris milah on Shabbos. We're not going to let you make a new cut just for a hit. But if it wasn't Shabbos, if it was a weekday, why not go back and fill in the hiddur? And the Rambam was unique, the Rambam and Hilchos Milah, who applied this even during the week, and said you don't go back ever. So we mentioned at the time that there are a number of Achronim who interpret this machlokes as revolving around the question of can you add a hiddur mitzvah after the mitzvah is over or separate from the key mitzvah? To what extent can a hiddur be separate from the mitzvah itself? And that perhaps the Rambam says you can't go back and add on the hiddur of the bris milah even during the week, because the hiddur always has to be together with the bris. So if you've already finished the bris, you can't go back and do the hiddur. While the other Rishonim, which the Rama Paskins like, maintain that you can have the hiddur afterwards, so therefore, if it's not Shabbos, you might as well go back and fill in the hiddur. So the Brisker Rav said, this is in his Sefer on the Rambam, you can look it up, the Brisker Rav says that that's the machlokas here. That according to the Rambam, a hiddur has to be done together with the mitzvah itself. So therefore, if that's the case, so the balabas who's doing the ikar mitzvah, he has to light all the candles. You can't have somebody else doing the hiddur candles, because the hiddur always has to be together with the key mitzvah. So if he wants to do a hiddur, let him light 80 candles in this last night of Hanukkah. While the Rama, we see in the case by Mila, he allows the hiddur to be separated from a mitzvah somehow, to some degree. So therefore, he'll allow the other members of the household to light their own menorahs. Follow? Get that basic parallelism, that basic sushtal? So there are some problems with it. It's a nice word. It's very neat. It's very Lundish. There are a couple of problems with it. First of all, the problem that we mentioned last week, that it's hard to believe that any Rishon holds that you can have a hiddur completely separate from a mitzvah. Like we mentioned the example last week, let's say you have one kosher esrog and one esrog that's not kosher but is beautiful. So okay, now I'm going to do my mitzvah esrog. And now I'll do my hiddur esrog, a different esrog. It's hard to believe that anyone would think that works. Clearly a hiddur has to have some connection to a mitzvah. Question about that?
No, question on the Rambam also.
So let's just finish the explanation. So it's hard to believe that anyone thinks you can really separate the hiddur completely from the mitzvah. So you probably have to sharpen it a little bit. Rav Moshe Sternbach has an essay about this in his Sefer Moed and Muzman. He was the Talmud of the Brisker Rav. It's in Siman Kuf Lamed Gimel, which is the same daf number in Shabbos for this machlokes, so it comes up. So Rav Moshe Sternbach has an essay where he says, really in both cases, and we mentioned half of this last week, you have to say that it's not totally separate, that by a bris milah, there's an active and a passive mitzvah. That as long as the person is circumcised, he's in fulfillment of the mitzvah. The maisa ha-mitzvah takes place during the circumcision itself, but for the whole rest of the man's life, he has a kiyum ha-mitzvah. So he says, maybe that's the issue here, that you have a similar structure when it comes to Hanukkah candles. That the active mitzvah is when it's lit initially, but there's the kiyum, at least, let's say, as long as they're lit, maybe all night, strictly speaking, there's a kiyum. So maybe the machlokus between the two of them is that the Ramah believes as long as there's a passive mode for the mitzvah, then you can come back and add in the hiddur. And the Rambam requires it to be an active fulfillment. You have to do the maisa mitzvah together with the hiddur. So the mila has to be together with the hiddur, and the balabas has to light all the candles. And the Ramah says in both cases that you don't have to be doing the active mitzvah. As long as the mitzvah is still in play, even passively, then you can come in and fix the bris milah, and you can come in and add more Hanukkah candles through other members of the household. That's also legitimate. So that's basically an extension of the Brisker Rav's word. You have to modify it a little bit in order to address that possible question. But there's another fundamental issue with this whole Hesbro. And that's an issue that kind of serves as an introduction to where we'll take a look at the sugya from here on in. That he's making an assumption here, the Brisker Rav, that there is what to parallel, that there's what to compare between the hiddur mitzvah that we spoke about last week, in the case of bris milah, and the sugya we just read, where we see mahadrim and a mahadrim. Now, clearly, they both have the same shoresh and the same theme of hiddur. But is it really the case that this is the same concept? And that's a major issue that the Achronim take up in this sugya. Should we assume that this Gemara that we just read, mahadrim, 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 is that simply an expression of hiddur mitzvah that we find b'chol haTorah kula, last week's sugya? Is this an application of zekeli v'yadveyu in Parashas B'Shalach? Or maybe this has nothing to do with that. Maybe this is a completely different concept. It's unique to Hanukkah. And it doesn't have anything to do with the sugya we were talking about last week when we discussed Zekeli V'Yadvei. So the Brisker Rav's explanation of the Rambam and the Ramah is all contingent on assuming it's the same thing. This is Hiddur Mitzvah. This is Zekeli V'Yadvei. So the same rules that apply to Bris Milah apply here. But maybe not. So what do you think on the surface? Any indication one way or another? Any indication this is the same? Any indication that it's different? What do you think? Can you bring any proof one way or another that this is similar, is different, or fine?
I don't know if any other mahajan has like various levels.
All right, that's definitely a big thing. Right? That's definitely one major indicator that that is unique, or certainly seems to be unusual, that a notion of not only a hither, but the Gemara stating three levels, mahajan, mina mahajan. Right, so if you ever see the restaurants in Israel that have hashgachas on the walls, it says mahadrim and mahadrim, it means they light the eight candles on the eighth night of Hanukkah, because this is really the place where you see it. That phrase, mahadrim and mahadrim, it comes from here, and you don't find that generally in halacha. So that, as the friend correctly points out, that does seem to be a clue that there's something unusual here. Any other clues? There's one very powerful clue, I don't know if we'll get to it today or not. With Michael, we have first?
It's an increase in number as opposed to the say aesthetic beauty?
Yeah, so that's, I think, also half a clue. You'll have to see how to interpret. That's why I call it half a clue, but it's definitely a relevant point, right? That this does seem on the surface to be a different type of hiddur than anything else. Right? It does seem to be fundamentally different than the kind of hiddurim that we talk about when we talk about an esrog or a sefer Torah or anything else that we discussed last week. So the notion of this numerical increase being somehow a part of hiddur, it catches our attention. I think there's what to argue about it, but it catches our attention as something a little bit different. Any other clues? All right, so we'll see there's another one that's even that's very, very compelling. But in terms of Rishonim, so it's interesting. For example, if you look at Rabbeinu Chananel, I don't remember if I put him on the Maamar Kamos or not, but he writes over here, Perush HaMahadrin, says, Mahadre mitzvos, kidamrinan bavakama tesam ebeis, lehidra mitzvah ad shlishka mitzvah. So he does seem to see this as standard kind of hidra mitzvah. He seems to see this as connected to Zekeli Gandeyu, because he links it to that sukkah we spoke about last week in Bava Kama Dav Tes, which talks about standard hidra mitzvah. So Rabbeinu Hanan at least seems to be taking a similar in that direction. And if you look at the Gemara in Bava Kama Dav Tes, Rabbeinu Hanan over there refers to this Gemara. So at least Rabbeinu Hanan does seem to link them. Does Rashi take a side of this? So Hamahadrin. So Rashi Dibra Maskil Hamahadrin. You could say he maybe takes a side in this. What's his language? Hamahadrin Achar Hamitzvos. Osin Ner Echa B'cholayla L'cholecha B'echa B'nei HaBayis. So is Rashi taking a side? You could argue, and there are those who have read Rashi this way, that he's saying, like Rabbeinu Hanan, that he is putting it in the context of a larger Hidr Mitzvah, and using the plural mitzvos, and therefore understanding this as an expression of Zekei Levi and Vehu. It's a little bit arguable, you don't have to say that way. It could be that the Rashi is putting it in a broader context, or he's saying that somebody who in general is Mahadir Achra Mitzvos will adopt this view here. So it's, I think it's a little bit ambiguous what Rashi is getting at. Rabbeinu Hanan seems a little bit more strongly to be linking the two. So, in any event, this is a very major position that a lot of Achronim take in talking about the sugya. They want to know, is this emblematic of general Hidur Mitzvah? This is typical of Zekeli V'Yadei? Or is this something completely else, as indicated by the Mahadran and Mahadran, by the numerical factor, by all these unusual aspects that seem to take it in a different direction? So just to mention one of the Gedolei Achronim who addresses this, and we have to consider if his approach is the only way to say it, Rav Yaakov Batzal Zsolti, I don't know if we mentioned him at all this year, but he's the author of a very popular sefer on many things, but the volume on Moed is particularly popular. When I was in college, it was very hard to get a hold of the sefer. It's a very popular sefer, and all the copies had been sold out. We're waiting for it to be reprinted, so people were always longing after getting the copy of the sefer. Now it's on HebrewBooks.org, so if you can't find it in the stores, you can download it for free. But the sefer is called Mishnas Yavetz. So in the sefer Mishnas Yavetz, Rav Zsolti was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim until around 1980 or so. And he has many essays on topics of Moed and other things. So on this sugya, he suggests the following. He suggests that he thinks the machlokas between Rambam and Tosas is about this question. That the shaila of, are we concerned with Hecker? That Tosas seems to be concerned with Hecker. And the Rambam, like Shmuley said, is not concerned about Hecker at all, apparently. Says Rav Zsolti, he thinks they're asking this question. That according to Tosfos, the way he sees it, this is a standard Hidr Mitzvah. Zekei Levi Anvei. So you may recall, we discussed last week, that some Rishonim maintain that a Hidr Mitzvah, Zekei Levi Anvei, is only useful if it's visible. If no one's going to see it, we discussed the machlokas last week about tefillin, the parshias of tefillin that are in a box. If no one's going to see the hinder, maybe it's not worthwhile. So if that's a necessary factor of hinder mitzvah, that it be visible. So maybe Tosfos is concerned for that reason. Tosfos holds the hinder mitzvah has to be visible, so therefore you need to have a hecker over here. But the Rambam, who doesn't care about hecker, says Rav Zsolti, why? Because, according to him, this is not your standard Zekei Levi Anvei. This is not a normal Hidr Mitzvah. And we discussed last week that when it comes to Hidr Mitzvah, you could question, is it an add-on? Is it something that is outside of the Mitzvah itself? Or is it something that grafts itself into the mitzvah? That's a question in general by Hiddur mitzvah. But the Mahadran and Mahadran and Mahadran that we read about here, so that, according to the Rambam, is something that is part and parcel of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah itself. And that is fundamentally more built into the mitzvah than a Hiddur mitzvah that you find anywhere else. And it's not contingent on it being visible. Other Hiddurim only make sense if you can see it. But this Hiddur is a part of how we do Ner Chanukah. It's interesting, we'll talk about this. The Shulchan Aruch, by the way, when he's paskening like Tosfos, he paskens so far like Tosfos that he doesn't even talk about the base level. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't record the psak of Ner L'Kol Echad V'Echad, Ner Yishebeso rather. He doesn't talk about a base level mitzvah. He only paskens that we have to do the Mahadran. Maybe that's something we'll talk about a little bit. But in any event, that's what he says. The Rambam's view is that it's built into the mitzvah itself. It's not dependent on our perceiving it, and that's why the Rambam has his position. So he goes on to prove his point by saying that you could see that there's this difference between the Rambam and Tosfos, and by their Talmidim, so to speak, the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch, and the Rambam, says that you see the following. That there is a halacha, which hopefully we'll talk about in a different context, that when it comes to Neris Chanukah is so important that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch both say that we have such an emphasis on the importance of Neris Chanukah that if one is unable to afford Chanukah candles, so then you have to go to great lengths. Shol al psachim amoicheres ksuso, that you do whatever it takes. You have to sell your clothes. You have to knock on doors and beg to make sure you can light Hanukkah candles. That halacha appears both in the Rambam and in the Shulchan Aruch. But there's possibly a machlokus between them. And it's really a machlokus by proxy because it's not explicit in their words, but the commentaries on their words interpret them in being the machlokus. That the Mishnah Berurah, when talking about the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch, that you should go begging for Chanukah, the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chemed Moshe that says the following. If you're going to go begging to light for Chanukah, should you go begging for all the candles of the Mahadrim and the Mahadrim? Says the Chemed Moshe, it doesn't seem to make sense. Right? If all these extra candles are a hiddur, so presumably, we don't have to go begging for a hiddur. If the halacha is we have to beg for this mitzvah is so crucial that we have to take extraordinary measures, presumably that means one candle, ner ishu beisu. But to say you have to go so crazy for a hiddur, that doesn't seem to be logical. If that's the view of the Shulchan Aruch, it's possible that the Rambam disagrees. Because the Rambam, the way the Or Sameach reads him, again, it's a little bit of machlokus by proxy, but the Rambam seems to say, Rambam uses the plural word neros, shol apsach mochers ksuso v'lokeach shemen v'neros, says the Or Sameach, that means that you have to go begging for the whole thing, even for the Mahadran. That's how the Or Sameach reads the Rambam. Then he says, parenthetically, even if you don't accept this, he says, once you've already started on the Mahadran path and you're adding candles, then, let's say, it comes the fourth night and you realize you don't have candles, then he says he thinks you would certainly have to beg for five candles, because otherwise it'll be poiches v'holech, it'll be going down, and that's not how we pass it. But separate from that question, he thinks in general, the Rambam is saying you should beg even for the Mahadran. So the Chemed Moshe makes sense, right? Why should you beg for a hiddur? So says Rav Zsolti, you see here that the Rambam seems to maintain that the hiddur of Chanukah is different than the hiddur of anything else. And you're right, in other areas of halacha, you would not go begging for a hiddur. But on Hanukkah, the hiddur is built into the mitzvah itself, and therefore it takes on the character of the mitzvah itself. And even though last week we gave all these examples where a hiddur does not adopt the same din as the ikkar mitzvah, here Hanukkah is different, and the hiddur takes on the quality of the mitzvah itself, so you'd go begging for that too. So Rav Shalty brings that Rambam as a proof to his premise that the Rambam sees the hiddur of Hanukkah as different and distinct and built into the mitzvah itself. Everyone follow? Okay, so that's Rav Shalty's basic position. He has a few other rayas. So b'mechilas kavodo, I think you could say the opposite. I think you could say something very similar to what he says, but in a very different direction, because there are some key objections I think one could raise to the explanation as he's presented it. So I will let you ponder what those are for tomorrow, just to quickly review what we spoke about, and tomorrow we'll offer a different approach to this, and I'll let you think about tomorrow what the issues are. I just also want to call your attention before quickly chazering, and then I guess maybe we'll dive in here. The Rambam goes on to say something else, just be aware of, that in Halacha Gimel, so the Rambam goes on to say, after he says his whole thing about how you combine the systems, so if you saw Halacha Gimel, so he records something else, right? What does the Rambam say in Halacha Gimel? That despite how he says to do it, he says, Minak Pashat, B'chal Areinu B'Sfarad, She'iyu Kol Anshei Abayis Malika Ner Echa B'Layla Rishon, Mosif B'Halcha Ner B'chal Layla, Ad She'nim Samadlik B'Layl Shmini Shmona Neros, Bein Shal Yanshei Abayis Ruben, Bein Shal Yadam Echa. So he basically disagrees with himself, and then next he says the minig in Sfarad is not like what he described. In other words, like the Shulchan Aruch Paskins. The minig and how the Shulchan Aruch Paskins sounds like Tosfos. So that's what the Lecha Mishnah reads. The Rambam is saying that he's recording the minig like Tosfos. There's some discussion if that's what he means, because if that's what he means, maybe he should say it's a Tos, because it means they're interpreting the Gemara in a fundamentally different way than he interprets it. So there's some discussion about what he means. It could be that this is all the Shitaso, that since he doesn't hold that the members of the household have the right to light their own candles, apparently. So then he's saying, if you only want to do level 2, if you only want to do Ner L'Kolecha V'Echad, it's going to stop like that. But not necessarily agreeing with Tosfos. But it's important for the completeness of the picture, just to be aware of how he goes on to describe how the minhag in Sfarad is different from what he said. Okay, so just to quickly chazer, we spoke about, we saw the Gemara, and we saw that there's a machlokas beisil beishamai about going up and going down, three levels in the Gemara about how to do things. The third level is machlokas beisil beishamai going up or going down. We gave some hezberim to beishamai's view about why you would go down, why you would invoke a comparison to Sukkos. Gave a little bit of a kopel about that from the Tshuva Svar Yeshua. Then we talked also about the fact that the application of Malam Kodesh Ve'Maridin is a surprising application. And also maybe the last line of the Gemara means to say that the Minig is not totally settled and one could theoretically paskin like Beis Shammai. And then we saw Machlokas between Tosfos and the Rambam. The Tosfos says only do level 3 without level 2 because of concerns of Hecker, and that the Rambam is not worried about that, doesn't seem to be worried about Hecker. We saw that there's a Psak anomaly here, that the Shulchan Aruch paskins like Tosfos, the Ramah seems to paskin like the Rambam. We mentioned a little bit of a major nuance between the Rambam and the Ramah. We mentioned the Shlomo's approach, that really the Ramah is accounting for both views. And the Briskerav's more lamdasha approach, that this machlokus is l'shitasam, the machlokus that we find by Hidra Mitzvah b'chalot Torah Kula. We discussed that approach a little bit about whether or not it's a valid distinction. We modified the distinction a little bit, and then we noted that the whole premise could be questioned because it's working off the assumption that Hidra Mitzvah here is the same as Hidra Mitzvah b'chalot Torah Kula, and that's a fair question to ask whether that's true or not. So some suggested some proofs that it's not the same, the fact that it has different levels, Mahadran, 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 the fact that it has this numerical factor, all of that seems to indicate that it's not the same. We saw some Rishonim, such as Rabbeinu Hanan, who do seem to connect them. And then we mentioned how Achronim raised that very question, is this the same as the Hidur Mitzvah and the rest of the Torah, or is it unique? And that Rav Shalty wrote that he thinks that's the machlokus between Rambam and Tosfos, that Tosfos is concerned with visibility because Hidur Mitzvah v'chol Torah Kula requires that it be perceived. And the Rambam's not worried about that because he sees this as integral to the mitzvah itself and not not something external. And his proof was that the Rambam, according to the Or Hasameach, would require you to go begging for even the Hiddur, while the Shulchan Aruch, as read by the Chem and Moshe, would say, go begging for Hanukkah, but not for the Hiddur, only for the basic candle. Maybe the Rambam seems to see it as something more. So tomorrow we'll discuss how you can see this differently and try to think about what areas you might question about this explanation so we could prepare the ground to perhaps see it differently. Who's going to lead us to Mincha? Fryer, you're...